Tonight we want to take the opportunity to study about a race of people that we read about in the Old Testament, such that we don't have among us on earth today. As you know, on Wednesday nights here for some time, we've been studying about Christian evidences and some of the recent, the most recent lessons that we've seen on that Brother Jan has brought for us have pertain to fossil records and where ones that are unbelievers try to look at ancient fossils and make that into ape men, partial ape, partial man, as if they're in between. But what has been learned, of course, in studying that when people are being truthful or honest about it is these different fossils, they really all fall in the categories of either apes or men. But one of the things we saw with these different fossils of men is there is quite a variety. That's what's given the opportunity for some dishonest ones to try to suggest that they're really not people at all. But when we look at it, well, yes, they are. And some are fossils of that have features or of races that don't appear to be among us today, though we do have quite a variety among us. We don't all look the same. We're all people. We're all made in the image of God as human beings. But when we go back and look at some of the ones that some of the men that we are told about in the Old Testament time, a lot of the nations and races of old times, of ancient times, are no longer with us, but one group that stands out literally above all the others are the giants. We read in the scriptures about giants that lived among men. We have people, large people today on earth that, you see some of these really tall basketball players. Sister Ida's son. A lot of people look at JD and think that's a giant, 6 feet, 8 or 9. When we read about the giants in the Bible of ancient times, JD would be dwarfed by them, and any of us would be. So they were truly giants, much larger humans than we have on earth today. We read about them, their existence after the flood. We don't know whether there were, of course, beginning with immediately after the flood, the Lord was starting over. All of the genetics of mankind were contained within the family of Noah. So all of today's races and all of whatever genetic diversity we see among humans, that was all contained there within the family of Noah, and certainly got expressed through their descendants in different areas. But there was this race of giants. There's not been any discoveries of any fossils of them. The fossils that we find on Earth today, when were most of them made, under what circumstances? When did you have the mass death of so many creatures where instantly they were, their skeletons were compressed in rock and fossilized? The flood. Whatever happened after the flood, do we find the same kinds of fossils that are made and preserved in the days after the flood? I mean, that we really don't see that, even though that won't be acknowledged by modern scientists, of course. But is it really a surprise that we don't have fossils of the race of the giants of the Bible? It's really not a surprise because they lived after the flood, but they were men. Let's take a look at the scriptures and what we learn about them, because they tie in to some very important lessons that God teaches us. And whenever we get to study about different nations and, or in this case, a race of these giants that actually pertain to several different nations in the land of Canaan, But when we read about these people of old, they end up coming into mention of Scripture as it pertains to the children of Israel. And very often it boils down to different battles that were fought with the children of Israel and some others, physical battles with these different physical nations, or in this case, races of men. And in all of those cases, what we're seeing is a foreshadowing of the spiritual war that we're in against wickedness in the high places, our battle against the devil and temptation today. And we have the reminder from those shadows as God gave victory to his faithful children in the Old Testament. He is our God today that will deliver us in our spiritual war. So when we study about the giants of old, I mean, what would be more frightening to see than people that are 10 feet tall or something like that? I mean, that would be absolutely extraordinary to see people that would be of that kind of size, 9 or 10 feet tall. I mean, and that would make us look like a grasshopper, as we'll see that some put it. Well, that would be very frightening. And what about finding a battle against one of them or a group of them? Would that be frightening to men? And it would. But when we read about God giving his people victory over these mighty giant men, well, what does that tell us, of course? And this will be one of the lessons that we learn, especially when we see it as it's tied into the promises and commandments of God that he gave to his people in the Old Testament. But we have commandments of God today and promises from the same God regarding our spiritual warfare that we're in. And it's a reminder of the victory that God's going to give his people in whatever battle they're facing. What were the giants to God in the Old Testament? Well, what is Satan to God today? So we have the opportunity to consider these things, and it should strengthen our faith. Well, we first read about the giants in what book of the Bible? The book of Genesis. And the word that we're going to read in Genesis chapter 14 for the giants is the word the Raphims. Well, that word, it means giant. And so it's translated Raphims in Genesis 14. That same word, that same Hebrew word, Rapha. So it's really a transliteration when it's Raphims, when we see that in the Old Testament in our King James Version. But most often we see it translated giant. But the word Raphim and the word giant, it's the same word, Rapha, in the Hebrew language. And so in Genesis chapter 14, we have the first mention of the giants. And this was a battle that took place, an ancient battle that took place. And Lot got caught up in it, well, literally got caught and was taken as a hostage, really. And then Abraham went and rescued his nephew. And it was right after that that we have the appearance of Melchizedek to Abraham. So Genesis 14 is a very interesting chapter, a lot of very interesting events in it. But the first six verses of Genesis 14 says, "It came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemeber, king of Zeboiim, however you say that, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. And these were joined together in the vale of Siddim, which is the salt sea. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. And in the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him and smote the Raphims in Ashtaroth, Carnium, and the Zuzims in Ham, and the Immims in Sheva, Kiriathaim, and the Horites in their Mount Seir unto El Paran, which is by the wilderness. So there we read about these Raphaims that were smitten in this battle. The Raphaims, he says, in Ashtaroth, Carnium. That's in the land of Bashan. Keep that in mind for a little bit later in this study when we read of a prominent remnant, the last of the giants of that area of Bashan, King Og, that Moses and the Israelites defeated in battle, this being before they crossed the River Jordan under Joshua to conquer the land of Canaan. But he was of those giants, those Raphaims. But there they were in that region of Bashan on the east side of the Jordan River. And they're mentioned there in verse 5. And then also the Zuzims and the Immims, he says, which is by the wilderness. And these were giants and the Horites in their Mount Seir. These were the giants that lived in the land, the area of Edom, Moab, and Ammon. Now, of course, the land of Edom was given to the descendant, given by God to whose descendants by his decree. That was the descendants of Esau that were the Edomites. And they were given that territory. Ammon and Moab, they were given their inheritance by God. Those were the children of Lot. Two nations descended from Lot. So we have Esau's descendants and Lot's descendants that make up those nations, Edom and then Ammon and Moab. Well, there were giants in their territories. So we read about that in the book of Deuteronomy a little bit more. So the preview of it is there in Genesis 14. They're mentioned, those ones that we'll also see called by name in Deuteronomy chapter 2. So they dwelt on the east side of Jordan in Bashan and also in that territory that God gave to the Edomites, the Moabites, and the Ammonites. But let's read from Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 8 through 12. It says, and when we passed by from our brethren, the children of Esau, which dwelt in Seir, through the way of the plain of Elath, and from Ezion-Geber, we turned and passed by the way of the wilderness of Moab. And the Lord said unto me, distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give thee of their land for a possession, because I have given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession. The Immims dwelt therein in times past, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims. The Anakims, those are the children of Anak. Those were the giants that remained in Canaan that the Israelites defeated eventually. But they were first seen by the spies, the 12 spies that went into Canaan. More on that in a few minutes, Lord willing. But here we read about the Anakims. That means the children of Anak. So he's the father of this race of giants that the Israelites contended with. And so these Immims that were in the land of Moab in times past, well, they were mentioned there in Genesis 14 and verse 5. The Immims in Sheva, Kiriathaim that he had noted in that particular verse. So in ancient times, those giants were in that area through Canaan and on the east of that the River Jordan, and there they were. But it says they were many and tall as the Anakims. He says which were accounted giants as the Anakims, but the Moabites called them Immims. The Horims also dwelt in Seir before time, but the children of Esau succeeded them when they had destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their stead, as Israel did unto the land of his possession, which the Lord gave unto them. So the children of Anak, those giants that were there, what did the Moabites call them? They called them the Immims, and so we read that word in Genesis 14 and verse 5. By the way, what does the you know what the word Emma means? Terrors. So they, Anna comes with the children of Anak. Well, that's a term that gives their lineage. The Moabites didn't call them that. They called them terrors. So these terrifying people, I mean, that just tells you the impact just seeing them would have. I mean, it was a terror to see those giants. But there they were in the land that God gave for an inheritance to the children of Lot, Moab and Ammon, as well as the children of Esau, to Seir. But what does the Lord say about those giants among them? They defeated them. So Moab and Ammon, the children of Lot, and the children of Esau, the Edomites, the giants were in their territory that God gave to them. So if they were going to inherit it, what did they have to do? They had to fight those giants. And God gave them, those people, that territory for their inheritance. So was God going to give them victory over those giants there? He did. That was God's will for that to be their inheritance. But just keep that in mind, that these wicked nations, even though, of course, we know Lot was righteous, but the descendants, his descendants of those two nations, Ammon and Moab, were wicked. Esau's descendants, that nation of Edom, was wicked. But God gave those wicked nations victories over the giants in their land. And of course, that was right next door to the land that God was giving to the children of Israel. So these giants, or terrors, as the Moabites called them. A little bit further down, verses 18 to 22 here in Deuteronomy chapter 2. He said, "Thou art to pass over through Ar, the coast of Moab, this day. When thou comest nigh over against the children of Ammon, distress them not, nor meddle with them, for I will not give thee of the land of the children of Ammon any possession, because I have given it unto the children of Lot for a possession." That also was accounted a land of giants. Giants dwelt there in old time, and the Ammonites called them Zamzumims, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims. But the Lord destroyed them before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead, as he did to the children of Esau, which dwelt in Seir, when he destroyed the Horims from before them. And they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead even unto this day. So those giants were there in ancient times. We saw that they were defeated in that battle in Genesis 14. But then when those descendants of Lot and Esau were given that those respective areas for their inheritance, they had to contend with and fight those giants that were there. And the Lord, it says, gave them victory and destroyed those giants before those nations. So that we read about concerning those giants. And those very ones that were around, that were defeated in that battle in Genesis 14, and we know that ended up involving Abraham. So did Abraham see any of those giants? Was he around? Were they around when he was in Canaan? Yes. And what did the Lord say about them to Abraham in Genesis 15, the very next chapter from where we were reading a moment ago? Verses 18 to 20. Here's the promise of God to Abraham and for his children. "In the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, Unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. The Kenites and the Kenizzites and the Cadmonites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Rephaims, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Girgashites, and the Jebusites." He names all those races of people that were in that land at that time, but who does he also mention that he says he was giving them over to? He was promising to give them into the hand of Abraham's descendants, the Rephaims, the giants. So did God promise that he was going to deliver those giants into the hand of the children of Israel? That was a promise he made to Abraham. Of course, that was carried over and extended through Isaac and Jacob when he promised to give them that land of Canaan, including all their inhabitants. And God promised that many times, but we notice he specifically mentioned the giants there and promised to give them victory over them. Now, as we noted, and we see in Numbers chapter 13, the 12 spies that were sent into the land of Canaan, when it was time for God to fulfill that promise he made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to the children of Israel, the spies were sent into the land of Canaan, and they saw those giants that were there. Numbers 13, verse 22 says, "And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were." Now, Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. The children of Anak, the Anakims, he was the father of the giants. So that area of Hebron, it was full of those giants. They were still there. And in verse 28, it says, "Nevertheless, the people," this is the report they gave, "the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there." So those spies in Canaan saw those giants in that region. In verse 33, he says, "And there we saw the giants, the son of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight." So they saw them, but knowing what God said and what he promised to Abraham, which was a promise now for them, of what concern should those giants have been to them? Should they have been Immums, terrors? Should they have been terrified of them? Well, 10 of those spies weren't they? And then they gave that report, and what did it do to the heart of the people when they said those words? They made them terrified of them, and they were afraid to go into the land, and then they were ready to appoint them a captain to lead them back into Egypt, and were ready to stone Joshua and Caleb, and those two faithful spies that had been with them. So they did not believe. Now notice, this is in spite of God's promise. So when they didn't believe, they were not believing the word of God. So when God told Abraham, "I'm going to give your descendants, I'm going to deliver the Raphaims, the giants, and give you their land for a possession," did they believe that? They don't believe it. Furthermore, God had done all of those mighty works in their presence. What had he done to deliver them from Egypt and their bondage there? I mean, they had seen the 10 plagues, the parting of the Red Sea. God had brought water out of the rocks. He had fed them with manna every day, sustained them in the wilderness. I mean, how many miracles had God done, and how much had he shown right before their own eyes of his strong hand that would deliver them from their enemies, protect them from harm, provide for them all of their needs? I mean, he had done all those works before them, but they didn't believe God, who had done all those works that they had seen with their own eyes. They didn't believe that promise he'd made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and to them. And also consider, God was able to give a victory for the Edomites, the Moabites, and the Ammonites over the giants that were in their territory. Here they are. They have theirs right next door that they're going to have to deal with. They have less faith than those wicked nations, because those other people went and fought the giants that were in their territory, and here they are. Well, we can't go in there because we'll get destroyed by these giants. I mean, that's really their thinking, and it's really, we can see why it was such a why God was so displeased with them in Numbers. The rest of what we read in Numbers 13, and then especially chapter 14. When he told them that was it, and they were not going to go into the land of Canaan, they didn't even have as much faith as those wicked people of the children of Lot and the Edomites. In Numbers 13, verse 30, it says, "And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it.'" Was he saying by our own power, or was his faith in God? Because he knew what God had promised, and he had seen all that God had done. His faith was fully in the Lord. He had no doubt whatsoever when God said he was going to deliver the giants into their hands. No doubt whatsoever with Joshua and Caleb. Chapter 14, Numbers 14, 6 through 9, it says, "And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes, and they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, 'The land which we passed through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us.'" Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. That's what they said, and they were right. Their faith was in God, but these people would not listen. Then this is this whole situation is summarized again in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 27 through 32. Deuteronomy 1, 27 to 32. It says, "And you murmured in your tents and said, because the Lord hated us, he hath brought us forth out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us." I mean, how could they even speak such words? God delivered them from the bondage of Egypt because he hated them? That's what they were saying. "Whither shall we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying, the people is greater and taller than we. The cities are great and walled up to heaven, and moreover, we have seen the sons of the Anakims there. Then I said unto you, dread not, neither be afraid of them. The Lord your God, which goeth before you, he shall fight for you, according to all that he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness, where thou hast seen how that the Lord thy God bare thee as a man doth bear his son, and all the way that you went until you came into this place, yet in this thing you did not believe the Lord your God." So yes, those giants were there, but were they giants to God? Of course not. But they didn't believe the Lord their God. But what did God promise concerning their children, whom they said that God was delivering to be a prey to those people? God said, they're the ones that are going to enter into the land of Canaan, and you won't go. And God fulfilled exactly that. And he commanded them in Deuteronomy 9, 1 through 3, Deuteronomy chapter 9, 1 to 3, "Hear, O Israel, thou art to pass over Jordan this day to go in to possess nations greater and mightier than thyself, cities great and fenced up to heaven, a people great and tall, the children of the Anakims, whom thou knowest, and of whom thou hast heard say, who can stand before the children of Anak? Understand therefore this day that the Lord thy God is he which goeth over before thee. As a consuming fire he shall destroy them, and he shall bring them down before thy face. So shalt thou drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord hath said unto thee." Could he be any clearer? I mean, he repeated Abraham's promise, but he told them those giants were going to fall before them. And of course, before they crossed the River Jordan under Moses, and we saw this in Genesis 14, verse 5. You may mention that. I said keep this in mind when it mentions those Raphims in Ashtaroth, Kerneum. That's in Bashan. Numbers chapter 21, 33 to 35. Numbers 21, 33 to 35. Says, "And they turned and went up by the way of Bashan, and Og, the king of Bashan, went out against them, he and all his people, to the battle at Edrei. And the Lord said unto Moses, fear him not, for I have delivered him into thy hand, and all his people, and his land. And thou shalt do to him as thou didst unto Sihon, the king of the Amorites, which dwelt at Heshbon." Well, why would there be any temptation to be afraid of Og and his people? Well, this was the last of those giants in that area, those ones that were mentioned there in Genesis 14 and verse 5. Doesn't describe them in this passage in Numbers 21, but doesn't need to. I mean, the Lord said, don't be afraid of them. I'm going to give you a victory over them. And it says, "So they smote him and his sons and all his people until there was none left him alive, and they possessed his land." That is the end of that particular family of giants there with Og and his people. We read more about it in Deuteronomy 3. Deuteronomy 3, starting in verse 1, it says, "Then we turned and went up by the way to Bashan, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And the Lord said unto me, fear him not, for I will deliver him and all his people and his land into thy hand, and thou shalt do unto him as thou didst unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, which dwelt at Heshbon. So the Lord our God delivered him, delivered into our hands Og also, the king of Bashan, and all his people, and we smote him until none was left to him remaining. And we took all his cities at that time. There was not a city which we took not from them. 70 cities, all the region of Argob, the kingdom of Og and Bashan. All these cities were fenced with high walls, gates, and bars, beside unwalled towns a great many. And we utterly destroyed them as we did unto Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and children of every city. But all the cattle and the spoil of the cities we took for a prey to ourselves. And we took at that time out of the hand of the two kings of the Amorites the land that was on this side Jordan from the river of Arnon unto Mount Hermon, which Hermon the Sidonians call Sirion, and the Amorites call it Shinar. All the cities of the plain and all Gilead and all Bashan unto Salcah and Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og and Bashan. For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of giants. Behold, his bedstead was a bedstead of iron. Is it not in Rabbath of the children of Ammon? 9 cubits was the length thereof, and 4 cubits the breadth of it, after the cubit of a man. Now, how much is the cubit of a man? From elbow to fingertip, 18 inches. So a cubit is 1.5 feet. So 9 cubits, for all of you math professionals out there, 9 cubits would translate into how long was his bed? 13.5 feet long and 6 feet wide. That's a big bed. That's a big man to lie in that bed. It doesn't tell us how big he was. It tells us how big his bed was. And we know that that was a bed that was suitable for his size. He was enormous. I mean, we don't have people around anywhere today that would compare to the size of such people. And that's why the Moabites called them terrors. But what happened? God said, don't be afraid of them. I'm going to give you a victory over them. And so he did. The Lord blessed them as he promised those ones who believed in him. So that's what happened to the remnant of those giants in that particular area. Now we know from that point when they crossed the River Jordan and Joshua was leading them, that victory over Og was under Moses. Joshua chapter 11, 21 through 23 says, at that time came Joshua and cut off the Anakims from the mountains, from Hebron, from Debir, from Anab, and from all the mountains of Judah and from all the mountains of Israel. Joshua destroyed them utterly with their cities. There was none of the Anakims left in the land of the children of Israel. Only in Gaza, in Gath, and in Ashdod there remained. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord said unto Moses, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance unto Israel according to their divisions by their tribes, and the land rested from war. So there was that remnant of the giants that were on the east side of Jordan under that Og represented that was utterly wiped out. There were some there that were on the west side of Jordan in the land of Canaan. And what happened to all of them? Utterly destroyed. None were left. All the remaining giants in that whole area were now confined to which areas? He mentions 3 cities. Gaza, we hear a lot about that area in the news today. Gath and Ashdod. Those were 3 cities of which nation? The Philistines. Do we read about any Philistines from that area, namely Gath? Of course, we know who was the giant from Gath of the land of the Philistines that was with their army that we read about in 1 Samuel 17, Goliath. But we're reading right there in Joshua that those were the last of any of those giants in that whole area that had been there for so long. Of course, we know what's going to happen to Goliath at the hands of David. But it mentions the conquering of and defeat of all of those giants in the land of Canaan by the children of Israel under Joshua, and that included Hebron that's mentioned there in Joshua 11 and verse 21. And specifically, who was the one that fought the giants in that region of Hebron and was given that for his possession? That was Caleb. And it's good you should know that. His namesake. That's right. And Caleb, the one of those two with Joshua, who were among those spies in the land of Canaan that said, don't be afraid of them. God is able and he's with us to deliver them into our hands. Caleb, his faith was rewarded. It was 45 years later, but God rewarded his faith and gave him victory over them in Joshua 14. And we'll close here. Starting in verse 6, it says, "Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua and Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, said unto him, Thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, Surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance, and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord thy God, my God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses." So how old is he now? He's 85 years old. But he's not your typical 85-year-old. He says, "Even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now, lo, I am this day 85 years old, and yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war both to go out and to come in." God was very kind to Caleb for his faith. I mean, he didn't make him, having spent 45 years between the time he spied out the land before now they've conquered it. And God doesn't say, okay, now you're a feeble 85-year-old man, but here you go. That's not what God did. He rewarded him, kept his physical strength the same as it had been all that time, and then rewarded his faith at the end there, having preserved him physically and, of course, spiritually. So God is showing his great kindness to him and rewarding his faith. And so he says, "Now therefore give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be that the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said." Has his faith changed at all? He's saying the same words now 45 years later. It says, "And Joshua blessed him and gave unto Caleb the son of Jephunneh Hebron for an inheritance. Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite unto this day, because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. And the name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba, which Arba was a great man among the Anakims, and the land had rest from war." The next chapter, Joshua 15 verse 14, says, "Caleb drove thence the three sons of Anak, Sheshai and Ahimam and Talmai, the children of Anak." So he personally went and fought those giants that were in his own possession. So when he had spoken those words 45 years before, that the Lord was able to give them deliverance and victory over them, and still repeated those words now 45 years later, God had preserved his strength. And now it was his task to go fight these ones that he had told the people not to be afraid of. And he wasn't afraid of them. And what happened? God gave him a victory over them. And that became his possession. So I know we ran a couple minutes over tonight. But we got to a nice stop in place there. Lord willing, next time we want to look at what you might expect to see as far as looking at this history of this race of giants, because there are some left. We read there, the only ones left in that area now are in those cities of the Philistines, Gaza, Gath, and was Ashtaroth. So David is going to defeat Goliath. There's going to be some other battles there. So this is going to persist down through time, and so we want to see what happens there. It's another example of great faith, like we saw with Joshua and Caleb and Moses. But this is an opportunity for anybody here this evening that needs to put on Christ in baptism, or if you're a member of the Lord's body, if you need to return to Him, if you've gone astray from Him, this is an opportunity for anyone that is subject to the Lord's invitation to come forward at this time, and we encourage you to do so if that is your need, while we stand together and sing.